All right, looks like we got Paul in right now, so let's kick it off here. And as always, towards the end of the month, we'd like to talk to our buddy, Mr. Paul Preston from the Movie Guys. Hello, Paul.
Hey-o.
How are you, sir?
Damn decent. How's by you guys?
Doing wonderful, buddy. Doing wonderful.
Awesome.
How is life treating you?
You know, I thought I had a formal introduction to your co-host, Caitlin, yeah?
Yes. Hi.
How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Well, you know, with none of this in-person nonsense, you know, I don't know. I don't believe we've had a formal how do you do. So how do you do?
Now, Paul is somebody you need to talk to also because he's a filmmaker as well.
Oh, really?
Well, yeah, I've made a bunch of shorts. I'm on the verge of my first feature. You know, I've got one other project to finish up, then I want to get onto that. And God bless you for getting out there in the middle of COVID and trying to make something happen, because it's it's rough, but it's fun to hear the stories, you know? Get it done. Get it
done.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
A million people can start a film, but it's the rare few who can finish it, so
exactly. Keep
going.
Thank you. Yeah, that's so cool that you're doing your first feature. I'm doing my first web series and first kind of anything with my studio. But
oh, cool. Yeah, I mean, I'm just due. I mean, I talk about movies all the time. I gotta end up make one. So
yeah.
You know, I've only had opinions for days. It's like, well, I think I could crank this out.
Well, you've done a couple of shorts.
The means to do so is so close now. I mean, I'm Sean's age. We're not Steve's age, but I'm Sean's age. So we've seen, like, you know, having to get $3,000 worth of film stock whittled down to just buy a card and you can shoot forever, you know.
Yeah.
So I should be taking advantage of that.
Okay, I have a question for you.
Uh-oh.
Just saw a movie the other day called Pool Party.
Oh no!
Does that ring a bell? Look at that, he's laughing.
Oh yeah.
But hey, Pool Party, of course, by occasional guest on this show and the singer of that COVID Christmas song.
That's right. That's right.
Justin Bowler. But this dude got it done. Guy got it done.
Yeah.
So points.
Yeah. And he even got naked.
Well, I mean, no points for that. But points for
no points for that.
Hey, let's give Justin the benefit of the doubt. It was cold that day.
Yeah. I was in the pool.
The water was not warm. Yeah. Yeah, we came across that last week and we were like going, "What? No way." Okay. So,
yeah, I haven't seen that in many moons, but yeah, if you want like a raunchy, just sex party movie, Pool Parties for you.
Yeah,
yeah.
But you got to direct some stuff yourself though, didn't you? Haven't you? Because you directed one of your wife's videos.
I've directed two or three music videos. Did a web series for her comedy troupe. I've got like two short films that made runs, and then another two I made with Justin. So yeah, all that's kind of racked up to. That was great. Feature time.
Yeah. So anyway, either way, Paul's a guy to talk to. Good guy to know.
Yeah.
So, all right, we got a bunch of movies to go over. Nightmare Alley. What the heck is this thing about?
Well, that's the problem, is that you don't know. And I don't know why people haven't sought this movie out. Perhaps it's COVID. Perhaps it was buried under Spider-Man, as everything was.
Yeah.
In fact, poor 20th Century Studios got a raw deal this Christmas. They put out perhaps the best slate of films during the holidays, you know, in terms of consistency. They put out West Side Story, Nightmare Alley, and The Kingsman. They were all great. They all kind of tanked, and it's a real shame because, first of all, Nightmare Alley is Guillermo del Toro. If you like Guillermo del Toro and the sort of weird, oddball fantasy stuff that he brings, this brings a little of that, but actually I appreciated it more because it's something like The Shape of Water. You know, there are scenes where characters are talking about the size of the alien's penis, and I'm going, all right, that's all over the top. But he pulls all that back and kind of just doubles down on filthy noir, and it's fascinating. I think it's right in his wheelhouse, and, you know, he's talked on the press circuit about, you know, this is a movie that has been, you know, kind of building up to in his life, and it shows. It's everything's there on the screen with great detail, and it's about Bradley Cooper is an opportunist at a Depression-era carnival. He learns the ways of scamming people as a mentalist, eventually takes those skills to the big city, and then things get really dangerous for him. you couldn't ask for a better cast. You got Cooper, who, I mean, that dude's due for an Oscar at some point between, like, I think he was nominated, what, 3 years in a row for American Sniper and wow. Silver Linings Playbook and American Hustle, I think. So,
well,
and
then well, then wasn't he also nominated for the song or whatever that with Gaga?
The Star Is Born.
Yeah, The Star Is Born, yeah.
He didn't write the song, but he was nominated as producer for that for Best Picture, and I think maybe actor, not director, unfortunately, but the guy just keeps getting nice. So he's due. He's a super talent.
Yeah.
He's great in this, and he's surrounded by Cate Blanchett, Rooney Mara, Toni Collette, Willem Dafoe, Ron Perlman, Richard Jenkins, Tim Blake Nelson, Mary Steenburgen, Holt McCallany from Mindhunter, David Strathairn. It's just great. And I want to give a special shout-out to a buddy of mine, Mark Povinelli. He's a little person, and he's teamed up with Ron Perlman, who plays like the big hulking brute.
Love
Ron
Perlman.
Are in the carnival working together, and he was on my show, Movie Nonsense. You should look that up on YouTube, because we had him on to tell stories about just hanging with Ron Perlman all day, and it was like really cool. And he's great in that too. So great cast, and just real danger and suspense. Dan Laustsen, I think his name is, the cinematographer who's worked with Del Toro on a bunch of movies, just outdoes himself to the point where they just released a black and white version of the film because it's so noir. And my co-host on the Movie Nonsense show saw that and said it was great. And I look forward to seeing that as well, because I would watch this movie again, and to see it in black and white would be super noiry and super haunting. And the last shots still sticking with me. So right up to the very end, he's making a great movie.
Did you see the original?
I did not. I just read an article, though, about how it changed just a little bit. But from what I'm reading, I think the change was for the better. I mean, mm-hmm. Del Toro's kind of doubled down in darkness, and I like that.
Ah, yeah.
Sometimes it's real tasty in a movie. So, but I didn't see it. Tyrone Power. And then, of course, based on a book. I think they cleaned up the book for the black and white, so I'm kind of glad that Del Toro returned to the little filthier side of things. That kind of Depression-era desperation and seedy characters and people taking advantage of other people, you know, when they're down and out, all lends itself to just not telling a, you know, fried green tomatoes. You know, it lends itself to this just ugly scene. And I thought it was great. Ken, everything I've described, yeah, it doesn't sound Christmassy. So maybe that's why. I thought one of the greatest taglines of all time was "A Girl with a Dragon Tattoo," and David Fincher put the movie out. They called it the "Feel Bad Movie of the Holidays," and that's what this was. But you know, it's an expertly made film, and for that, you should check it out. It's not too late. The black and white version might be out of theaters now, but if you catch it anywhere, I still would. But of course, you know, now the window to streaming is shorter than ever. So if nothing else, hang out and catch it there.
It's all on right. HBO on the 5th of February.
No kidding, really?
There you go.
They're planning on coming out.
Okay, let's move on to this next one here, which I thought is really interesting. My son got to see this one. I think it's the same one, because of the film itself and who's in it, which is called Coda.
Okay, I may have said this, but I've been on the show. If I haven't, it's something I've been dealing with for a while, which is, where's the best picture? Like, sometimes by now, late in the award season like this, I have a movie that's just the one to beat. By now, by late January, you know, mid-January when I saw Coda, I've got the movie to beat, whether it's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Captain Phillips, La La Land, you know, it's whatever it is, beat this. And I didn't have that until Coda. That changed. Coda, to me, is the best film you're going to see all year. It is a beautiful film. And I'll give you a bit about what it's about. CODA stands for Child of Deaf Adults. It's a great title also, because it's about this girl who's the only member of a family who can hear, but she's outcast at school. You know, she has the quote weird family unquote. She works for her family's fishing business and runs herself ragged, but wants to sort of fit in at school. So she tries something. She joins the school choir because she's always singing when she's working. You know, she's not bothering anybody. Her family's deaf. So she's just singing and trying. And so she meets with this choir director who sees something in her. And next thing you know, this leads her down a path where she's at odds with her parents and working the fishing job and her dream of maybe studying singing at a great school. There's no frills direction here. The acting, story, and script totally win. This isn't an arrival of somebody with a huge thumbprint like Guillermo del Toro or Tarantino or someone who you love going to see David Fincher because he's going to bring this look that you love. Just the story, acting, script totally win, and the director, Sean Heater, and she had a lot to deal with too, of course, having to direct actors who can hear and those who can't and trying to make it all coherent and cohesive. And so all around, this movie is just fantastic. And no scene gets to the next in a way I saw coming. Not in an M. Night Shyamalan sort of, whoa, that was a twist kind of way, but just the scene would start to play out, and I would, I never try and like predict things or get ahead of myself, but you do go, oh, you know what I would do here if I were her? I was always wrong. And that was a great aspect of the script as well.
And it also stars Oscar-winning actress, Marlee Matlin, yeah.
Yes, one of my 80s crushes.
Yeah, sure. In her first film, which was Children of a Lesser God, you know, she won Best Actress. And, yeah. And who is a deaf person. And I think I remember watching an interview with her where she was saying that she didn't want actors to portray deaf. She wanted actual deaf actors in this film. And I thought that was wonderful, you know, overall.
Yeah, and Emilia Jones is the daughter who can hear, and she's outstanding in this movie. And just, I mean, I had a mask on. It was soaked, some tears and snot, whatever. I was just crying. Mm-hmm. Not that it's a depressing film like Nightmare Alley, but it's just beautiful. There's no finer film released in 2021. And you got Eugenio Derbez, whose name I might be butchering. He's made this career as sort of Mexico's Jim Carrey. You might have seen him recently show up in like the Overboard remake or How to Be a Latin Lover. Mm-hmm. This to me is his best sort of way he's gotten into American filmmaking.
Nice.
He's really good as the choir teacher. He's hard nosed, you know, but he's sort of got some kind of weird charm about him. And he gets built an excellent relationship with Ruby, the young girl who wants to be a singer. And I'm telling you, man, just find this. I saw it in the theater. Thankfully, there was an awards screening I got to go to. Your luck of doing that might have run out, but it's an Apple Plus original, so it's right there sitting for you, waiting awesome. To see. And worth, I'm telling you, worth the try. Go get the trial if you don't have Apple TV Plus. And just watch that. Watch the Beastie Boys documentary, and then get out.
Okay. All right. We got two more real quickly to do. Summer of Soul. What's that one?
Oh, do you not know this film?
I do not know this one.
Yeah, this is a movie put together, the directorial debut of Questlove. And he heard about this, what they've called Black Woodstock in 1969.
Wait, you're talking Questlove, the drummer?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Yeah.
Where have I been?
And he found out about this thing called the Harlem Cultural Festival, I believe it was called, in 1969, and it happened the same summer as Woodstock. So it just got completely sort of buried in history.
Okay.
And Questlove, of course, is on this sort of quest, no pun intended, to sort of unearth things that he considers may have been a victim of black erasure in history. So he found all this footage, and sure enough, like, nothing had been done with it.
Wow.
It is an insane lineup of artists. I guess it took place over a number of days or perhaps a number of weeks. But, you know, the film tells of the one big festival where you had like B.B. King and Stevie Wonder and the Fifth Dimension and just Nina Simone and on and on and on. And he does a really good job. First of all, it's edited within an inch of its life. I'm pretty impressed with all the archival footage they found, and then interviews with people like Marilyn McCoo, who are, you know, still with us, and Stevie Wonder, who can talk about the event. Mm-hmm. And then just paralleling it all to the times. You know, 69, of course, a crazy year.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I think one of the days of the festival happened the very day of the moon landing. And he does this great montage about how white people are talking about how it's the most important thing in the world. But people are like, who cares? It's kind of funny. And then, but of course, they have their own issues to bring up in the wake of the killing of Martin, in the wake of the killing of Malcolm.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just a fan. I thought it was a really good documentary, and not just for how it puts together all that juxtaposition between the news and the times with the, you know, the festival happening and it being a celebration of Black culture and music, but just as a concert film, like the sound is incredible. Mm-hmm. I was really impressed at the audio on this thing, considering its
age,
you know, 53 years old or something. Yeah. So, yeah, so that's one worth seeing. Unfortunately, again, the theatrical run might be done, but it's a Hulu original, so you can watch it there. Just turn up the home theater and you'll enjoy it.
All right, and we got a few more minutes for this last one here. Don't Look Up.
Okay, well, this was a close runner-up for my favorite picture of the year, but it is really uneven. So it was like, not quite, but I did really enjoy this movie. Now, first of all, I followed Adam McKay. If you know him as the director, Adam McKay, who made Anchorman and Talladega Nights and Step Brothers. I followed him in Chicago when I was studying at Second City. He was on the main stage, watched him improvise all the time with the likes of Tina Fey and Rachel Dratch and Scott Adsit. And you could tell he had a thing for social and political commentary. So by the time he made The Big Short, you knew, okay, he is in his wheelhouse. This is his thing. And sure enough, he won the Oscar for The Big Short and now has made Vice and Don't Look Up. And those are all great films. He's cranking out movies that are really what he wants to say. And I love he swings for the fences. And again, with that, there's some unevenness, like Jonah Hill's character, who's like an Ivanka Trump type son of the president, is way over the top. But if you don't know what the film is about, it's about some scientists who find that a meteor is hurtling towards Earth, and they're trying to tell the world to do something about it. This whole thing, of course, is an allegory for climate change and the subjugation of scientists by people who are stupid. And man, it is fun to watch and frightening to watch and uncompromising. And Leo DiCaprio has a monologue when his scientist character appears on a daytime talk show, which they, you know, really send up with Cate Blanchett again and Tyler Perry as the just vapid hosts of the show. He does this monologue that is just, I damn near started crying. It was like everything a scientist would want to say to those who just aren't listening about climate change. Or, and now I think without him even thinking about it, Don't Look Up is also kind of a parallel to the pandemic, because scientists are saying all these things and then people aren't listening, and they've got to just be, you know, scratching their heads and then banging them against the wall with everything that's happening here. But again, talk about an incredible cast. I mean, I've already mentioned you know, Tyler Perry, who I like in everything, although I've never seen a Madea movie. I probably should, because I like him in everything, but I gotta.
Well, I was kind of surprised or whatever that it, when I found out that he was in it, that it wasn't called, you know, Tyler Perry Says Don't Look Up.
Yeah, Madea Don't Look Up, yeah. Yeah, Cate Blanchett, of course, DiCaprio is always good. Jennifer Lawrence and Meryl Streep is in it. She plays the president. So every chance that McKay gets to skewer a different aspect of our, you know, brain dead culture. Mark Rylance plays a tech giant who has this advanced technology that he's devised, but like no ability to be social or human. And so that's obviously a lot of these things are broad, but he totally gets the point across. And I would rather he make these huge choices than hold back and make something that's less interesting to watch, because this movie is something. You probably heard people debating it online. It really is divisive. I go on the side of, you know, well done.
Yeah.
Well done.
Well, either way, we got four good movies to go check out. Nightmare Alley, Coda, Summer of Soul, and Don't Look Up. And, of course, this is our dear friend Paul Preston from The Movie Guys. You can catch him on themovieguys.net. where he has his own movie reviews and everything else going on there too. So check him out, because he's worth it.
Yeah, we just dropped a new episode of the Ford Feet dropped. What am I, 20? we just put out a new episode of the Ford Fiesta. That's the podcast where my buddy Adam and I are watching every Harrison Ford movie, and each episode is a different film as we break it down, discuss it, do a comedy kind of recap of it, and have a lot of fun. And the one we just put out was More American Graffiti, because he makes a cameo in the beginning of that. So even if he's on screen for a second or a word, we're watching it. And that's an interesting listen, because we brought on a guy who swears more American Graffiti is better than American Graffiti.
Ooh.
So a buddy of ours, he's like a legit critic. He's just like, no, it's more ambitious and more fun. So that's always a good listen. And we've got like 40 more episodes to go.
Hey, Paul.
Hey.
You're looking to make a feature. I just have three words for you. Pool Party 2.
Oh, and also, well, you may not be 20, but you know who is? Hi.
Did I use the word right? A new episode dropped.
There you go. There you go. Paul, always good to talk to you, buddy. We will catch you next time.
Yes, movies.
All right, my friend. Take care.
Farewell.
All right, buddy.